Hello and welcome to the Compliance Week podcast. I'm Joe Mont, staff writer for Compliance Week. In this edition, we talk to Ellen Zimeles, a managing director at Navigant Consulting and head of the firm's global investigations and compliance practice. She is also the firm's financial services advisory and compliance segment leader. She has more than 30 years of litigation and investigation experience and previously served as an assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York. For this podcast, we look north of the border and at corporate governance reforms in Canada that may be of particular interest to compliance officers engaging in the fight for greater resources, especially as they develop effective anti-money laundering programs. Late last year, the Canadian government released proposed regulations in conjunction with proposed amendments to the Canada Business Corporations Act. The corporate requirements include diversity disclosures, majority voting in uncontested director elections, and internet-based delivery of meeting materials to shareholders. These governance enhancements stand alongside a rule that allows CCOs to report their companies for not giving them enough budget to be effective. We asked Zimeles to explain more about that particular initiative.
So this is not new in Canada. This is a requirement, basically, that the CAMLO, or the Country Anti-Money Laundering Officer in Canada, is required to tell OSFI, the regulator there, that whether they believe they have the right resources to basically to perform as they should and to have an effective program. And it is by having that and by requiring the CAMLOs to basically disclose to OSFI if they don't, gives them, I think, a little bit of leverage and allows them to be able to go to their management and say, look, I cannot say that, or I need more people to do my job correctly or to have this program run properly. Now, management can always come back and say, well, we don't think you're running it properly, and we'd like you to look at how you can do this more efficiently. Having said that, at the end of the day, it's the CAMLO's decision, and that is, I think, a very effective tool for them to have when dealing with, you know, budgetary issues and making sure that they have the staffing and the resourcing they need.
Does that requirement pose some unintended issues for CCOs? What we saw after the financial crisis was that many automatically conflated resources with increasing headcounts. In many cases, perhaps it could mean technology or other needed complements to the compliance function. What happens if the response from management under this rule is, well, I gave you more staff, when what you really needed was something more?
Absolutely. Look, much of compliance and certainly financial crime compliance right now, a lot of it is people, but a lot of it is technology. And actually, you know, eventually either replacing people with technology or replacing different kind of staff with technology. Oftentimes the technology may require you to hire more staff because you get more information out of it that is usable. But the staff might be different in character, or different in level of expertise. So I think it's really, you know, you have to look at the whole thing as a combination. But resourcing does not just mean staff; it means people, technology, and it can be space. It could be lots of different, you know, issues. Whatever it means to have your organization run well, it can mean updated training for the people that you do have. It could mean all different things.
After the financial crisis, a lot of people looked to Canada, which, to a large degree, escaped many of the banking calamities other countries experienced. How much of what Canada is doing in terms of bank safety and corporate governance could be, or should be, imported to the U.S. regulatory regime?
So Canada has many fewer financial institutions than the U.S. They have other issues. You know, there might be more commodities firms there. There are other kinds of firms that they have there. But it is a slightly, you know, it's a different model and many fewer people in Canada, obviously, than in the U.S. So it's a different, you know, things come across differently, fewer accounts, fewer issues to deal with. But I do think that they have a pretty good regime. there was an issue for a while whether they focused enough on corruption issues in Canada versus money laundering issues. But and it was really that Canada had statutes on the books, but they weren't being enforced quite that much. So over the past several years, Canada has focused on that quite a bit more and is moving more on that level. But I think this particular issue that the Canadians had given to the anti-money laundering officers was a very powerful tool. I can't say that nothing like that exists in the U.S. because everyone is required to, you know, there are lots of different, if not whistleblower statutes, other different requirements and obligations. And DFS is now, you know, has an attestation requirement for your transaction monitoring and your sanctions systems that goes into effect. It's called, you know, under Rule 504 that DFS came out with recently. It goes into effect for the year of 2017 and will actually be, there will have to be a certification, they call it, in 2018. And so that's a brand new requirement that has everybody very focused, because those are really difficult systems to manage and to make sure that you've got all the right information in there. So I think there's a lot of that that goes in, that is in place in the U.S. This was a very specific requirement that very directive, and I thought that was very helpful. I had seen different circumstances in Canada where I thought that was a really helpful tool. The issue is you don't want to pit the compliance officer against management, right? It should be the compliance officer is there as a control function to help and shouldn't be pitted against. So you have to be careful how you use that tool that you have and making sure that you're using it appropriately. But I think it was very helpful. I saw it used well.
We are seeing added scrutiny and responsibilities for boards in how they deal with compliance and risk. That's taken place in the U.S., Canada, and many other countries around the world. Is it reasonable to hope that a greater understanding of the compliance function will, at some point, mean that resource-related battles will not be nearly as common as they were in the past or may even be currently?
There is definitely a change, and you see more of a change in organizations that have gone through a problem, right? When an organization has gone through something already, some major enforcement action or a law enforcement investigation or something, the board education, you know, or learning curve is extreme, and they have a much greater understanding of what happens than when they've never had to go through that. So I do think, in a way, having gone through one, although very painful, at the end of the day, or oftentimes the organizations come out in a stronger place.
That's all the time we have for this edition. We've been talking to Ellen Zimeles, a managing director at Navigant Consulting and head of the firm's global investigations and compliance practice. This is Joe Mont, staff writer for Compliance Week. Thank you for listening.